Hi, everyone. It's Naomi Wolf with Daily Clout. And as promised, I'm reading you the new Green New Deal, which Representative Ocasio-Cortez introduced. So there's been a lot of press about kind of a scandal or a drama in the news about this text of the Green New Deal, because as many of you know, the Green New Deal resolution that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez posted on Twitter from her own website, which we at Daily Clout read in detail last week, has been disavowed by Representative Ocasio-Cortez and her team, including on national television, as having dropped out of the skies, been a mock-up by Republicans, not really the real resolution. Of course, it was the real resolution from her own website. And as those of you know who've watched it, it did call for funneling vast sums of money without public oversight, or with the option of no public oversight, into totally opaque financial instruments that could be created at the behest of these 15 unscrutinized members of a committee which is being designated to oversee this gigantic Green New Deal. Other surprising things that the version that she has disavowed, but that we know to be from her website, contained last week included a smart grid, a national smart grid, which is very concerning to people who worry about surveillance and is beloved by the telecom industry. And it also contained a tremendous amount of money for geoengineering, which is largely untested, quite dangerous in many cases, technologies. The IP is owned by Silicon Valley venture capitalists. And so there's huge sums of money going to geoengineering in her last version of the bill. But the really striking thing about it was how undemocratic it was, that it did have that option for no public oversight and for vast sums to be funneled into instruments, including the Federal Reserve, for the Green New Deal, which is, of course, a private entity, as well as opaque financial instruments. So the good news is that democracy is finally working the way it's supposed to. And I think that we here are some small part of that, because in the wake of the outcry about what was in that resolution for the Green New Deal, as well as a great deal of scrutiny of the FAQs about the Green New Deal resolution that Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, Rep. Ocasio-Cortez had also on her website, and a lot of critical media coverage, the Democrats have pulled back and they've entered into the congressional record a formal Green New Deal, which really doesn't look anything like this Green New Deal from last week. It's almost completely different. Some sections are the same, but it's much less easy to criticize. And I say that neutrally. So I'm going to read it to you so you know exactly what's in it. Other big news we have is that Stryker Pierce, our friend's disclosure, my personal friend, which is an investigations agency, has found an agenda from Nevada for a regional transportation authority, a meeting scheduled for next week. It's dated February 15th. Today's February 10th, 2019. And it names the 9 members of the committee, the climate crisis committee, that Nancy Pelosi is due to name. So we're breaking that news as well. I believe that news has not been reported elsewhere. So this Green New Deal says that it's a resolution recognizing the duty of the federal government to create a Green New Deal. So it is a resolution that's not the same as a bill, but it's basically saying we in the United States government are committing to a direction. All right, and this is why. And so the preamble points out that human activity is the dominant cause of climate change, over the past century. A changing climate is causing sea levels to rise. Global warming, it must be kept at or above 2 degrees of warming, or else there's going to be mass migration from regions most affected by climate change. More than $500 billion in lost annual economic output will be faced by the United States by the year 2100, so their economic costs. Wildfires by 2050 will burn at least twice as much forest area in the western United States as now if we don't do anything. A loss of more than 99% of all coral reefs. More than 150 million more people will be exposed to heat stress. And there's a risk of damage to billions of public infrastructure and coastal real estate. On page three, it calls for global temperatures to be kept below 1.5 degrees Celsius for even better outcomes, and that this will protect us in many ways. So that's the preamble. It also addresses wage stagnation. So this resolution is trying to fold together action on climate and action on the eroded middle class. And mostly what it has is a big gift for unions because it folds together over and over initiatives and investment in infrastructure dedicated to stopping climate change with benefits for unions. And so there are other whereases. Whereas the House of Representatives recognizes that a new national, social, industrial, and economic mobilization on a scale not seen since World War II and the New Deal era is a historic opportunity to create millions of good, high-wage jobs in the United States, to provide unprecedented levels of prosperity and economic security for all the people of the United States, and to counteract systemic injustices. So that's the preamble. It's not just climate, it's social injustice. So I like it. Those are my people, right? I come from that world, but I just want to let Republicans and independents know that this bill isn't just, or this resolution isn't just aimed at creating a green infrastructure, putting solar panels on rooftops. It is holistically linking together solving the environment crisis and solving a host of other social crises or issues that you may or may not care about as much as the climate crisis or want to address in this way. And they include racial injustice, economic disparity, class differences, gender bias, bias toward Native American populations, and the hiring of unionized workers. So let me just make that super, super clear. It's not just about climate. It's a vision of addressing climate in a way that addresses historic social inequality. All right. So it's the duty to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions through a fair and just transition for all communities and workers. That's page five. To create millions of good high wage jobs and ensure prosperity and economic security for all people of the United States, and to invest in infrastructure and industry of the United States to sustainably meet the challenges of the 21st century. So it's a giant infusion of money in infrastructure. on page six, under section D, it says that it aims to secure for all the people of the United States for generations to come, sub one, clean air and water, sub two, climate and community resiliency, sub three, healthy food, sub four, access to nature, and sub five, a sustainable environment. But that's not all. Paragraph E is also to promote justice and equity by stopping current, preventing future, and repairing historic oppression of indigenous peoples, communities of color, migrant communities, de-industrialized communities, depopulated rural communities, the poor, low-income workers, women, the elderly, the unhoused, people with disabilities, and youth. And all of these groups in paragraph E on page six, all of these groups are referred to in this resolution as, quote, frontline and vulnerable communities, end quote. So as a woman, you know, this packs a gigantic amount of assumptions into a paragraph. And they're very ideological assumptions, and they don't have to do directly with climate. As a woman, it lumps me with all of my privilege that I was lucky enough to be born into and all of my whiteness into the category of a frontline and vulnerable community. And it also lumps in there groups that may not see themselves as having a common identical agenda, for instance, treating rural communities as facing the same kinds of oppression as homeless people, as young people, as migrant communities, as communities of color, and as people in Detroit who have lost their industrial base after globalization. You know, maybe all these groups of such different Americans can be addressed as a giant lump called frontline and vulnerable communities, but a lot of people are going to say, wait a minute, you know, that's very reductive, and it doesn't have to do with climate. Moving on. Sub two, the goals described in subparagraphs A through E of paragraph one, referred to in this resolution as the Green New Deal goals, should be accomplished through a 10-year national mobilization, referred to in this resolution as the Green New Deal mobilization, that will require the following goals and projects. So again, this is it, you know, you could say it's ambitious, you could say it's exciting, but it's definitely not democracy, exactly, because it's saying whoever is in power in 10 years, let alone 4 years or 8 years, this is going to be happening. We're going to devote money to it. We're going to devote planning to it. And it transcends the decisions that the people of the United States might make about their leadership. We've only been elected for, you know, 2 years or 4 years, but we are going to pass a resolution that's going to lock us in for 10 years. And you could argue that the climate crisis requires that, but it's definitely stating, it's like the Bush people stating the global war on terror is going to go on for 99 years. It's a big grab for historic real estate in the future, whoever's in power, whatever the people of the United States say. Seven. Is page 7A, building resiliency against climate change related disasters such as extreme weather, including by leveraging funding and providing its investments for community defined projects and strategies. So what the hell is that, right? What is that? On page 7, it basically says we're going to give money to communities to define projects and strategies for themselves, and if they call it part of a Green New Deal, they get the money, okay? So that's big. It means that, you know, Oakland can say, well, we are going to give everyone in Oakland a free Wii device and call it part of the Green New Deal, and the federal government is going to fund it. You might think that's great. It is definitely a collapsing of federal and local. It's definitely saying the federal government is in the business of handing money out locally, which is not really how our system works. You know, but that's what this does. It's kind of top down. It's kind of top down democracy. Instead of the grassroots electing representatives, the representatives are saying, here's a blank check to you, the town of Oakland, as long as you call it the Green New Deal and you define it. And this, to me, this makes me worry who then will be selected as communities, right? Who then gets to decide who gets to cash the check and for what in the city of Oakland? B, repairing and upgrading the infrastructure in the United States. Okay, including sub one, by eliminating pollution and greenhouse gas emissions as much as technologically feasible. That's cool. It's a goal. It's not a mechanism. I don't see how yet, but that is definitely squarely in a Green New Deal headline and rubric. Sub two, by guaranteeing universal access to clean water. That's cool. I'm all for it. Sub three, by reducing the risks posed by climate impacts. Okay. and sub four, by ensuring that any infrastructure bill considered by Congress addresses climate change. How do you do that, right? How do you require that any bill in the United States, even if it's introduced by the opposition, even if it's introduced by people who don't agree with this, must address climate change? I like it as an outcome. I know we probably need it, but it is definitely short-circuiting one of the pillars of our democracy, which is that the bill gets to be drafted by the people's representatives and passed by the people's representatives. And these 15 people and Nancy Pelosi don't get to say what's in the bill, right? That's kind of called fascism. But there it is on page 7 at the bottom. C, meeting 100% of the power demand in the United States through clean, renewable, and zero emission energy sources. Okay, that's neat. It basically is an FU to the fossil fuel industry, but one might well argue that it is time for that if people support this. So including one, by dramatically expanding and upgrading renewable power sources, okay, and two, by deploying new capacity. All right, so giant investment in renewables, although interesting, they're not exactly saying what renewables, but that's fine. D, building or upgrading to energy efficient, distributed, and quote, smart power grids, and ensuring affordable access to electricity. All right, this really does get interesting and complicated on page 8 at the top. Building or upgrading to energy efficient, distributed, or smart power grids, and ensuring affordable access to electricity. This is a giant gift to the telecoms. It's worrying the smart grid, which was in the original bill that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or resolution rather, withdrew from her website. And it definitely is a concern, because a smart power grid is also able to track you. It's also able to, put satellites that people are scared of the health effects for, smart meters, all kinds of surveillance devices in a way that you really can't escape. And it's questionable whether a smart grid really is necessary. She's not saying, and this is where you'd expect her to be saying, we want to build docking stations for electrical cars on the government's dime throughout the United States. She's not saying we want to put solar panels at the government's expense on top of everyone's roofs. Or like France just did, we want to require that all new buildings have solar panels or else plants on their roofs, right? She's saying a smart power grid, and she's not defining what that is. And she's also saying ensuring affordable access to electricity. Well, electricity is not necessarily reducing a carbon footprint, right? So she's not saying affordable access to solar generated electricity or wind generated electricity, right? So it's, right here, it's, a giant gift to PG&E at the expense of Exxon, essentially. But also, it's also not making a distinction between private property and public buildings. She's not saying, we have to make sure that all new federal VA buildings have a smart power grid or are efficient in their fuel use. She's saying your house and my house have to comply. Maybe it's time for that, but you should know that that's what this says on page 8E. Upgrading all existing buildings in the United States. All existing buildings in the United States, and building new buildings to achieve maximum energy efficiency, water efficiency, safety, affordability, comfort, and durability, including through electrification. So what the heck, right? I mean, this is subsection E, page 8. She's saying, take Naomi's cottage upstate, make sure that the federal government ensures it to be energy efficient, maximally efficient with water. All right. I mean, I guess I'm open to a bunch of government inspectors coming into my house and making sure on their dime that I'm not wasting water or energy. Safety? They're going to come in and assess my house for safety, my private house. Affordability? What? right? Like, I'm kind of left of center, like how I grew up, but even I recognize the difference between, you know, socialism and a free market. And so far, the United States hasn't voted for socialism. How is the Green New Deal supposed to ensure affordability for every building built in the United States? It doesn't say affordability of energy use or affordability of, you know, buying reduced impact energy. And it definitely goes back again to electrification and durability, including through electrification, by the way, and comfort. What the hell is the federal government doing investigating my comfort and determining my comfort in my own home? Why is the government legislating what they call comfort in a bill that's, or a resolution that's ostensibly about climate change? Totally not their business, what I consider comfortable. It goes back again to the electrical grid. It's not going back to a bunch of alternative energy sources. It's really, again, a gift to power companies that are delivering electrical. It's a gift to Con Ed and PG&E rather than to fracking and fossil fuels and natural gas. So this section here doesn't really move the sustainable energy goal forward. It just says, let's give more of our stuff to electrification. F, spurring massive growth in clean manufacturing in the United States, that's nice, and removing pollution and greenhouse gas emissions from manufacturing and industry as much as is technologically feasible, including by expanding renewable energy manufacturing and investing in existing manufacturing and industry. That's cool. I think a lot of people would like that. But again, notice what is still missing. It really is not yet saying all new federal building has to be super compliant to conserve energy or generate, you know, solar power. It's not saying what's the biggest emitter of greenhouse gases. One of them is cars. It's not saying anything yet about making cars, helping people to minimize carbon emissions from their automobiles. It goes back again and again to housing, to electricity, and to kind of intervening in your private home, as opposed to doing things you would think are naturally the target of a Green New Deal by the federal government. G, working collaboratively with farmers and ranchers in the United States to remove pollution and greenhouse gas emissions from the agricultural sector as much as is technologically feasible, including sub 1, by supporting family farming, sub 2, by investing in sustainable farming and land use practices that increase soil health, and sub 3, by building a more sustainable food system that ensures universal access to healthy food. So, that's cool. A lot of people would like that. Certainly the Midwest family farmers who have been so badly hit would like that. And what she's talking about there is a technology in which is fairly new, which is called regenerative agriculture. And we had an interview with former governor Dennis Kucinich about this, which is putting carbon back into the land as a way to enrich the soil. Maybe it's a great idea. It's still in the planning stages or testing stages. It's still experimental. Could be awesome. But she's saying let's work collaboratively, which is nice, but there aren't the kinds of supports for sustainable agriculture that you see in Europe, for instance, like helping people get off of using fossil fuels in their tractors, in their processing. Maybe obliquely it's saying that, but it goes right to building a more sustainable food system that ensures universal access to healthy food. So again, it's collapsing containing emissions with let's get healthy food to everyone. I like the idea of getting healthy food to everyone, but it is definitely a whole intervention in market forces, which is different from, okay, I'm signed on to reducing climate emissions. H, overhauling transportation systems in the United States to remove pollution and greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector as much as is technologically possible. Well, that's a natural thing to expect, including through investment in sub one, zero emission vehicle infrastructure and manufacturing. All right, well, there you finally have it on page nine. You know, you want to create a grid of highways for the self-driving cars that are being developed that probably have lower emissions for electrical vehicles. And presumably here you've got the plug-in stations that I said were missing earlier. Clean, affordable, and accessible public transit. Okay, that's nice. I like that. Obviously, it's going to be good for the environment. No argument there. That's a nonpartisan thing most people would like. And high-speed rail, which you'd think would be part of public transit, but it's got its own sub three. So all of those make sense. But again, what you don't see is a commitment by the federal government. There's all this intervention in the private sector, but it doesn't say, you know, and first of all, the federal government, which is a huge consumer of goods and resources and huge producer of fossil fuels, especially the military, right? They're not saying we'll make sure that all of our vehicles are zero emission. We'll make sure that we're transporting workers, transporting the military through, you know, as much public transportation as possible to cut down on our emissions. And it doesn't say anything about foreign policy to reduce emissions either. For instance, less war, less emissions, right? I mean, literally, you know, warfare around the world, our 600 undeclared wars around the world are one of the biggest producers of greenhouse gas emissions in the United States. All right, I'm getting lots of people watching and thumbs up. Sub one, mitigating and managing the long-term adverse health, economic, and other effects of pollution and climate change, including by providing funding for community-defined projects and strategies. That's another one of these kind of sneaky, unmarked gifts to people's buddies and constituents, which is like, if you're a community and you define it as long-term adverse health, economic, and other effects of pollution and climate change, we'll give you a check and you can define it however you want. Maybe that's a good idea, but it certainly, like the other Green New Deal, opens a giant door for enormous amounts of money flowing to Democrats' constituents, you know, to the traditional Democratic supporters, unions, older people, communities of color, you know, cities. That may be what the whole country wants, for these communities to have money flowing to them in this special way. But this bill is definitely on page nine, giving these 15 people on the committee that Nancy Pelosi is appointing the power to say, here's a check, say it's good for your health vis-a-vis climate change, and cash it. And the United States taxpayers will pay for it. Jay, removing greenhouse gases from the atmosphere and reducing pollution by restoring natural ecosystems through proven low-tech solutions that increase soil and soil carbon storage, such as land preservation and afforestation. So this is a sneaky way to give vast sums to a not very well-established technology, which Harvard owns the tech and IP for. There was just a cover story in New York Magazine about this. It's called carbon engineering, carbon capture, and it kind of sucks the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and turns it back into fuel. It may be promising. It's got all kinds of possible problems, but mostly what's important about it is that some venture capitalists on the West Coast who've been pushing for these bills, pushing for Zoe Lofgren's weather privatization bill of 2017, they own the tech and IP. Harvard owns the tech and IP. So this is a giant gift to these venture capitalists who own geoengineering tech and IP to say, go ahead. And again, there are so many more obvious things you could do to stop climate change in the United States, like, you know, put solar on all the roofs, build wind farms. I haven't heard a thing about wind farms specifically. You know, make sure that there's massive mobilization of buses and trains, as sort of mentioned. But to say, well, and here's a big check for this marginal geoengineering industry that Harvard owns the tech and IP for, so does Bill Gates, so does a bunch of VC guys in California who are friends with Nancy Pelosi. They're called Intellectual Ventures. You know, that's pretty dodgy in my view. K, restoring and protecting threatened, endangered, and fragile ecosystems through locally appropriate and science-based projects that enhance biodiversity and support climate resiliency. Okay, that's fine. No one's going to object to that. L, cleaning up existing hazardous waste and abandoned sites, ensuring economic development and sustainability on those sites. So there's already something called Superfund that already does this. I guess it gives more money to do more of this. But again, what does ensuring economic development and sustainability on those sites really mean? Again, these sites are in cities. Cities are democratic. And these are big, giant blank checks for Democrats and for people who vote Democratic. I mean, I this is nonpartisan. I tend to vote for these people, but I have to call it as I see it. We're nonpartisan here at Daily Cloud, and this is, what is economic development and sustainability? They're not saying green economic development and sustainability. They're just saying have some money, cities, because you have some horrible hazardous waste areas. We'll clean them up, and then we'll just give you some money. Please keep mobilizing people to vote for Democrats. M, identifying other emission and pollution sources and creating solutions to remove them, whatever that means. And again, these arcane additions instead of more obvious ways to address climate change, such as, you know, things that Europe is doing successfully, like keeping cars out of cities, like rush hour pricing, like not building more highways. And promoting the international exchange of technology, expertise, products, funding, and services with the aim of making the United States the international leader on climate action and to help other countries achieve a Green New Deal. So this sounds like putting back in place a carbon market, a pollution market, which has been tried in the past. And what this does is it would create a marketplace in which people who are invested in these shares basically can engage in carbon trading internationally. And so here what I see is the United States is going to be pressing other countries to develop Green New Deals so that there can be this giant global exchange that's profitable for people who are invested in it of the right to pollute. Maybe that's needed. Maybe it's a great idea, but let's just call it as we see it. There's also some question here, given our history of imperialism, about why we have the right to force or compel other countries to adopt legislation that we like. That's what diplomacy is for. That's what multilateral treaties are for. I don't know that a resolution run by, which is going to be administered by 15 people, is the place to make other countries do what we want. Three, a Green New Deal must be developed through transparent and inclusive consultation. This is probably a result of the criticism that Ocasio-Cortez got when we and others showed how opaque the last Green New Deal was, with the option no public hearings, no public oversight. Through transparent and inclusive consultation, elaboration and collaboration, and partnership with frontline and vulnerable communities, labor unions, worker cooperatives, civil society groups, academia, and businesses. Listen to that list. I'm going to read it again. Who is named? Everyone but white, white men. I'm sorry. There's going to be consultation by the government, collaboration by the government, and partnership, which means money, with privileging whom? Frontline and vulnerable communities. You remember how that was defined. That was defined as Native American communities, communities of color, young people, women, disabled people, right? That whole left litany of identity politics. That's who is being partnered with and consulted primarily, and this is, I'm not making it up, at the bottom of page 10, as well as those frontline and vulnerable communities, labor unions, traditionally backing Democrats, worker cooperatives. Is there such a thing like Ben and Jerry's, like in the United States, worker cooperatives? What is that? that is basically socialism. It doesn't really exist in America, maybe a food co-op in Brooklyn, but it's an imaginary sector. Unless the federal government is going to be nurturing worker cooperatives in the United States of America, which hasn't really been a thing since the 30s and people found out they didn't like communism, who will that be? That will be two girls in Birkenstocks putting legumes in a bin in the workers' cooperative in Brooklyn or in Berkeley. And civil society groups, how do you define that? Everything's a civil society group. Academia, because they're really, nonpartisan and civic-minded. And businesses. So who does this leave out? Veterans. It leaves out, middle management workers. It leaves out pink-collar ghetto workers. It leaves out rural people are not considered leaders in this, except where they're bundled into vulnerable communities. It basically creates, I don't like it, and I'm from the left. It creates a hierarchy of who gets consulted. And it names the traditionally most victimized as the main partners and leaders of the Green New Deal. It doesn't say every American. It doesn't say any American who wants to speak up or organize. It doesn't say Republicans as well as Democrats, Green Party as well as whatever. It literally spells out and singles out certain groups to be more partnerable with than other groups. It is definitely, in my view, 1984, some pigs are more equal than other pigs. It's not American. It's not constitutional. I highlighted this in the last Green New Deal as violating the Constitution, the Equal Protections Clause. I still think it violates the Equal Protections Clause. Not everyone is represented here, and there isn't language saying everyone has an equal voice. Four, to achieve the Green New Deal goals and mobilization, a Green New Deal will require the following goals and projects. Page 11, providing leveraging in a way that ensures that the public receives appropriate ownership stakes, what does that mean, and returns on investment, adequate capital. What that means is, give me a giant blank check, America, including through community grants, right? Funneling money to the cities, right? Fine, if that's what you want, but you should know this is what you're voting for. Public banks and other public financing. What is that? What is a public bank? Name a public bank, right? So it's saying, it's still saying, even with all the criticism of the last iteration, we're not going to use the federal government to administer this money through the government. We're going to use these secretive third-party financial instruments that you can't see, you can't vet, and you need to be a friend of a friend to get one. Now, it's a reverse friend of a friend. It's a community group or a community grant, right? It's the marginalized, but you better be friends with the marginalized because they're the ones who are going to get the checks here. Technical expertise, supporting policies, and other forms of assistance to communities, organizations, federal, state, and local government agencies and businesses working on the Green New Deal mobilization. All right, so basically it's saying we're washing the money through these non-transparent entities still, even after all this criticism. And B, ensuring that the federal government takes into account the complete environmental and social costs and impacts of emissions through one, existing laws, that's fine, two, new policies and programs, and three, ensuring that frontline and vulnerable communities shall not be adversely affected. Too bad if middle class or upper middle class America is adversely affected in this Green New Deal. You're on your own. If you're a frontline and vulnerable community, that's who we really need to worry about in so many words at the bottom of page 11. C, providing resources, and by the way, this is so ironic because climate change affects everybody, largely equally, bad air, heating, diseases. Yes, there are impacts on low-income communities that are disproportionate, but everyone suffers through climate change. This is really discriminating against, I hate to say it, but it's discriminating against middle-class people. It's discriminating against people who are not, quote, frontline vulnerable communities. And frontline of what, right? Like, as I said last time, privileged white woman in the West Village, I'm included in a frontline community in violation of the Constitution. C, providing resources, training, high quality education, including higher education, to all people of the United States, with a focus on frontline and vulnerable communities, so that all people of the United States may be full and equal participants in the Green New Deal mobilization. So at the bottom of page 11, you may like this, you may not, it gives a free college education, free training to everyone, which you may think is awesome, but it's saying with a focus on frontline and vulnerable communities, which I think is not awesome as an American who believes in equality under law. And again, you know, you may want everyone to have a college education for free, but is that really about climate change? Is that really about capping emissions? Or is it bundling a whole bunch of other stuff into this an ostensibly emissions-focused resolution? D, making public investments in the resources and development of new clean and renewable energy technologies and industries, a little repetitive. And E, directing investments to spur economic development, deepen and diversify industry and business in local and regional economies. What is a non-local economy, by the way? And build wealth and community ownership while prioritizing high quality job creation and economic, social, and environmental benefits in frontline and vulnerable communities and deindustrialized communities that may otherwise struggle with the transition away from greenhouse gas intensive industries. So again, more investment in those people whom this resolution privileges. And if you want investment and you're just a middle-class person in a suburb, you're not singled out here for a leadership position. F, ensuring the use of democratic and participatory processes that are inclusive of and led by frontline and vulnerable communities and workers to plan, implement, and administer the Green New Deal mobilization at the local level. So once again, at the bottom of page 12, putting the federal government at the local level, ignoring the fact that we have democratic processes, it's called democracy, and saying we're going to use participatory, what the hell is that, right? Processes inclusive of and led by frontline and vulnerable communities and workers. I want frontline and vulnerable communities to have a voice. I like workers. This is messed up. This is saying ignore democracy, ignore democratic processes. The leaders in your community have to be from these identified groups, or else there isn't going to be leadership. And the way the decisions get made have to be in a participatory way that hasn't even been defined and isn't necessarily existing state and federal democracy. G, ensuring that the Green New Deal mobilization creates high quality union jobs that pay prevailing wages, hires local workers, offers training and advancement opportunities, and guarantees wage and benefit parity for workers affected by the transition. You might like that, you might not. It's a gift to the unions. H, guaranteeing a job with a family-sustaining wage, adequate family and medical leave, paid vacations and retirement to security to all people of the United States. Okay, hello, France. Like, I love it, but I'm a socialist. Right? I mean, kind of. My son calls me a libertarian socialist. I think everyone should get retirement. I think everyone should get paid vacations. I think everyone should get family and medical leave. But I respect the fact that half the people in this country don't think the federal government should pay for that. A lot of business owners don't think so. And this forces policies on people under the guise of a Green New Deal that they didn't vote for and that Democrats couldn't get voted for if they were to propose a bill independently about family leave, about retirement, about free paid vacations. And again, what does this have to do with climate change? I, strengthening and protecting the right of all workers to organize, unionize, and collectively bargain free of coercion, intimidation, and harassment. I agree with that. Again, what does it have to do with climate change? It really has to do with paying back union leaders. J, strengthening and enforcing labor, workplace health and safety, anti-discrimination, and wage and hour standards across all employers, industries, and sectors. I agree with that too. A lot of business owners don't agree with it. lot of capitalists don't agree with it. Shareholders may not agree with it. It has nothing to do with climate change, or at least this resolution hasn't shown how it does. K, enacting and enforcing trade rules, procurement standards, and border adjustments with strong labor and environmental protections to stop the transfer of jobs overseas, to grow domestic manufacturing, ensuring that public lands, waters, and oceans are protected and eminent domain is not abused. Okay, that two out of three of those have to do with climate change. The first two have nothing to do with climate change. They have to do with getting protections for working people and for labor unions that could not be gotten through actual legislation. And last page, page 14, you've been very patient. M, obtaining the free, prior, and informed consent of Indigenous peoples for all decisions that affect Indigenous peoples and their traditional territories, honoring all treaties and agreements with Indigenous peoples, and protecting and enforcing the sovereignty and land rights of Indigenous peoples. Certainly we can all get behind that because those are real treaties and the law should require that. N, ensuring a commercial environment. This will blow your mind. I'm not trying to make fun of this. Ensuring a commercial environment where every business person is free from unfair competition and domination by domestic international monopolies. I'm going to read that again. Ensuring a commercial environment where every business person is free from unfair competition and domination by domestic or international monopolies. How do you do that in a resolution, and what does that have to do with climate change? I'm a small business owner. I would love to not have to struggle to compete with CNN and NBC. How is Ms. Ocasio-Cortez going to get rid of competition from CNN and NBC so small media companies like mine can thrive? How is this going to get rid of Walmart so the local retailer whose goods cost more can thrive in a globalized marketplace? I don't know, and neither does this resolution. But that is a statement of an outcome which is a major intervention in capitalism. Maybe America wants that kind of suspension of capitalism, that kind of protection, which interestingly Trump initiated, but the Democrats didn't get that by actually campaigning and electing people to carry it out. So they're folding a kind of socialist worldview and anti-corporate worldview in the very last page of this, and it has nothing to do with climate change. And lastly, sneaking it in, sub one, providing all people of the United States with one, high quality health care, two, affordable, safe, and adequate housing, three, economic security, and four, clean water, clean air, healthy and affordable food, and access to nature, repeating the last sentence, which has been repeated several times in this bill. So in page 14, the last page of this bill, which is the real HRES 109, the real Green New Deal, they slide in affordable health care for everybody, they slide in housing, they slide in economic security, and so that's what a bill nominally about stopping climate change, about addressing runaway climate crisis, does in the last page, hopes you won't notice. I like affordable housing, I like healthcare, but no one was able to pass those bills through open debate up until now. And so the Democrats have slid it into this last page and created a mechanism whereby, you know, these 15 people who are named to be on the committee can just make it happen and say, look, the Green New Deal mandates affordable health care for all, economic security for all, and housing for all. I may love that, but the people of the United States did not vote for funding a living wage for everyone in America, whether they are or aren't working. The people of the United States didn't vote for funding affordable housing for everyone, wherever they are. People of the United States have a lot of feelings about universal healthcare for everyone. They didn't pass it yet. So, or they did, and now they've repealed it. So this is pretty sneaky, and it's on the last page, the bottom of page 14, don't take my word for it, of the Green New Deal. So there you have it. It's 14 pages. Maybe 60% of it has to do with real investment in real infrastructure that will actually help to address climate change. The rest of it is a gigantic giveaway, a huge blank check with still lots of opacity to vulnerable and frontline communities defined in a very PC and limited way, leaving out big chunks of America and creating new processes, which are not ordinary democratic processes, and folding in goals that have nothing to do with climate change, like support for labor unions, support for a universal income, support for affordable housing, big interventions in the free market. You may think those are great, you may not, but you didn't vote for this. So if America wants to pass it, they should pass those bills that do those things. If they haven't passed them, then you should know that the Green New Deal is 60% green and 40% a deal for a bunch of people who may not be you. This is Naomi Wolf. Remember to become members of Daily Cloud. Every little bit helps us bring these videos to you. They cost money to research and produce. We embed BillCam. It costs money to host it. It costs money to support the technology and buy the data. We're going to embed HRES 109 right in this video so everyone can understand it. You can vote for or against HRES 109 on the BillCam. You can tweet HRES 109, the Green New Deal, to Ocasio-Cortez, to Nancy Pelosi, to your representative, and you can identify those pages where there's something you like or something you don't like. This is Naomi Wolf in the service of democracy and the Constitution. Thank you for your patience, and please become a member of Daily Cloud. Bye-bye.